Right. It is 6 minutes past 9 o'clock, and that means that it is time for us to cross live to the UK, where Gavin Gray is waiting in the wings for us to bring us the latest headlines making news in the UK and Europe. Morning, Gigi. How are you?
Very good, Sarah. How are you this morning?
Yeah, I'm all right. Thanks very much. I did my first sports day yesterday as a mum. I think I fared quite well. We all survived. We all had a race. There was like a mums and dads and grandparents race. And despite my jippy foot, I did quite well, in that. And the little one did well in her little race. So yeah, we all survived, surviving and thriving, Gavin, surviving and thriving.
Very good.
Yeah, good. All right, your top story for us. Now, a Polish man has been arrested and also charged with planning to cooperate with Russian intelligence services. And this is all in connection with the possible assassination of Volodymyr Zelensky.
Yes. So Volodymyr Zelensky uses an airport in Poland to fly around the world. He has, of course, been pressing the flesh, as it were, shaking hands with leaders around the world in order to try and make sure that the aid that's been promised is coming into Ukraine, and also that more will be promised. But the actual location and the various details about that airport are obviously not widely known. But a man who's been named as Pavel K has allegedly been tasked by Russia with collecting information about that airport. And the arrest is basically made on the basis of Ukrainian intelligence. He could face up to 8 years in prison if found guilty. Authorities haven't said whether he passed on any information, whether he knew any secret information, but the suspect is in custody and the investigation is ongoing. The prosecutors allege that he offered his services to the Russian military intelligence. He contacted Russians directly involved in the war in Ukraine, and was a key part of trying to help them do that. And this isn't the first time, incidentally, that's been alleged that Russia is trying to use all these dirty tactics to secure information on President Zelensky or Ukraine. But it certainly shows, I think, the background mechanisms in place in what has become a very intractable war.
And then we stick with Ukraine as a bit of a theme. And two alleged spies who've been suspected of planning to sabotage aid, military aid for Ukraine, have also now been arrested in the state of Bavaria in Germany.
Yes. So again, I think another example of some of the background work that Russia's alleged to be doing here. The main suspect, this time just called Dieter S. We only get these things. We don't get the full names. Has been remanded in pretrial detention, accused of a string of offences, including plotting an explosion and a fire and maintaining contact with Russian intelligence. The second suspect is accused of helping him since last month to identify potential targets for attack. And this is all about, it's alleged anyway, Russia trying to weaken that supply chain of arms and money to Ukraine. And in this particular instance, it's said that the men are accused of scouting US military facilities and other sites with the aim of effectively trying to sabotage German military aid for Ukraine. The Russian ambassador was summoned by the foreign ministry in Berlin. They said it was a particularly serious case of alleged spying activity for Russia. And this is pretty serious. Germany is the second largest donor of military aid to Ukraine after America. It was slow at the start, but has now given a lot of aid. Said to be roughly 450 billion South African rands worth.
And then a crowdfunding campaign in Slovakia to buy artillery shells for Ukraine has exceeded its target. It had a target of €1 million or £850,000. Less than 48 hours after it was launched, it's hit that target. That is extraordinary.
Yes, it is. And so this is the last of the three stories about Ukraine that have really been dominating our headlines here. Because in this instance, There was a change in senior personnel within the government of Slovakia. And the Prime Minister, Robert Fico, came into power in October, pledging not to send one round more of ammunition to Ukraine. And then there was indeed a change of personnel at the top of the government, meant he had more support. And so, sure enough, Slovakia has turned the tap off when it comes to delivering ammunition. However, somebody who just says, I just feel so much for the Ukraine, set up a crowdfunding initiative. And as you said, the target was originally roughly 20 million South African rand. They've reached that after just 24 hours with individual people chipping in. And this was all started by a 99-year-old who kickstarted the campaign. He said, I lived through the Second World War and I fought in it. I can tell you there's no point in negotiating with Hitler and there's no point negotiating with Putin. And so what they're trying to do is to buy up ammunition around the world using the crowdfunding money. Now they've reached their target. They say, well, they're not going to stop. Obviously, the people of Croatia don't agree with the government, Slovakia rather, don't agree with the government on this particular issue. And so that's what we're going to do. This is very interesting because a number of other European governments are beginning to waver with their support as this war has gone on. But I think it does show the strength of people, at least in Slovakia itself.
Your next story, Gavin, of particular interest to us here. The UK has issued a terrorism alert for South Africa and its citizens who are in or planning to, for UK citizens, who are planning to travel here. What is this all about?
Yes, and why? That's the question I've been trying to ask and find out. The UK just says that British citizens should avoid crowds and densely populated areas in South Africa, like tourist sites, shopping centres and high profile events. It's been published on the official website of the UK Foreign Office with, quote, terrorists are very likely to try to carry out attacks in South Africa. It said the main threat is from individuals inspired by terrorist groups like ISIS or Daesh to carry out a sort of lone wolf attack, a lone actor attack. The big question, I think this is what Pretoria has been trying to find out from the Foreign Office, is, OK, well, what is your proof? What have you been hearing that makes you issue this warning? The UK so far apparently failing to provide those channels to communicate concerns. And that's obviously causing a great deal of frustration and anger, dare I say it. Experts, though, are divided on this warning, with some saying, look, really, don't need to worry. Others saying, yeah, actually, we do have this fear and it is something that people need to worry about. But it seems to be pretty similar to other Western Embassy warnings issued last year that terror attacks might take place in Johannesburg, in Sandton, to be more precise, a very popular area with tourists if they visit Johannesburg. We're left wondering why they've issued this, but they have. And I'm afraid it obviously is bad news for the tourism industry.
It is really bad news, particularly when it seems to be sort of not very clear as to who or what or why. But there we are. A British doctor is facing being struck off the medical register. This is so bizarre. For taking part in a Just Stop Oil demonstration. How has that got anything to do with her ability to practice medicine?
Yes, that's exactly what people are asking. But the General Medical Council, which obviously is the overseeing body for doctors, have to be informed if a doctor is arrested and charged. Doctor, who's Dr. Sarah Benn, she's 57 years old from Warwickshire in the Midlands, basically has been taking part in these Just Stop Oil protests. And she says, you know, this is an emergency for the human race. I, as a doctor, am charged with helping prevent disease and death. And frankly, that's what I'm doing, because the climate crisis is, she says, the most significant existential threat to global health we've ever faced. Anyway, she is up before the General Medical Council for a hearing that's expected to last at least a couple of weeks. And she's one of three GPs that are under scrutiny, GPs, general practitioners, doctors in the community, who are under scrutiny for similar reasons, she said. She has pointed out that although she was demonstrating outside an oil terminal in the Midlands with a sign saying no new oil, it was a peaceful protest, and she was protesting in an area that was set aside for protesters. So it does seem extraordinary, but I think the thing is that she has said after each arrest, she's been arrested numerous times at different sites, apparently. She contacted her employer to say what had happened to her, to let them know. But nevertheless, people are saying, particularly when we're so short of doctors in this country at the moment and waiting lists are so long, this seems an odd thing to want to ban somebody for doing.
It seems extraordinary to me. Ho-hum. The UK has rejected a European Union offer making it easier for people aged between 18 and 30 to study and work abroad. Why?
Well, this is a really interesting thing. And I think, well, I know you're going to have a strong opinion of this. I know when I read the initial story that I was.
Right.
So is all about the fact that currently to 10 Commonwealth nations, basically Commonwealth nations, the UK has a deal that young students can come from around the world. The main countries that use this are Australia, New Zealand and Canada, to come and study or work in the UK for up to 2 years. Now, since leaving the EU with Brexit, it has not been open to EU applicants. And when somebody comes into the UK for this scheme, they have to pay a fee, and that goes towards the NHS, the National Health Service, should they need it. And that fee is roughly 20,000 South African rand. The scheme is for 2 years, and it also suggests that, you know, they need to obviously inform the authorities and get this visa, and it's normally a pretty straightforward job to do. Now, the EU heard that the UK had been contacting individual members within the European Union to say, if you would like to join the scheme on a mutual basis, that will be fine. Well, the EU Commission didn't like that. And it's turned around and said, no, if you want us, you've got to have all 27 members of the European Union join in this. Now, I can kind of see that, Sarah Jane, because, you know, the EU is a bloc, I suppose. Here's the rub for me. They then turned around and said, right, we don't want 2 years, we want 4 years. We also don't think we ought to pay that fee at all, ever, for coming to the UK on this scheme. Oh, and here's the other thing. When a UK person comes to visit Europe on this scheme, they've got to nominate the one country that they're going to visit and then stay in that country. Well, that smacks to me of a slightly uneven playing field.
Yeah.
And it's why, dare I say it, the attitude of the EU is by some in this country held up as being something that is simply not reciprocal. And I'm afraid, to me at least, as an outsider, very much looks as to why so many people in this country got fed up with the EU enough to vote the fact they didn't want to stay.
Right, yeah. I mean, that seems unfair. To be honest, God, that's okay. That's bizarre. I tell you what, I'm really glad that I don't have to worry about this kind of stuff anymore. I'm here. I'm not moving anywhere. I'm certainly not aged between 18 and 30. I don't know. I think about my kids though, and about, you know, people used to harp on and say to me, "Oh, your kids are so lucky. They've got a British and a South African passport." I'm like, well, it used to be that, you know, my British passport was held in great esteem. But since Brexit, there's nothing really. It doesn't really help me do anything other than not have to be in a long queue when I go to the UK, which is never. So I, you know, it doesn't really benefit any of us, but we're quite happy here and not having to worry about that. But who knows, in the future they might want to get as far away from mum as possible and go and live in the UK or somewhere in the EU. I don't know. I've just, before you go, Gavin,
it's useful, always useful to have those dual nationalities, Esther, and I must just say, I've got to add on my little list for you as well.
Yeah,
it is the marathon today.
Ooh.
And you won't believe this. The sun is shining.
No. That's Listen, I always tell this story. In fact, I'm sure I told it last week because it was our marathon a couple of weeks back, or last week. I can't remember, the Cape Town Marathon. When I was at university in Greenwich, my halls of residence overlooked the route, the marathon route. And so inevitably, it was always on either a Saturday or a Sunday. Yeah. So inevitably, myself and my flatmates had kind of gone out on the lash the night before, and would be very, very hungover. And what we would do, we'd put our mattresses and some cushions from our sofa we had this funny little balcony, although that is playing fast and loose with the term balcony, to be honest with you. It's just this very small outdoor area. Well, as a smoker, as I was then, I was forced outside to go and smoke, and because I obviously wasn't allowed to smoke inside. And we would lay watching, you know, like a rhinoceros or person dressed as a rhinoceros running by, or, you know, some do-gooder dressed as Mr. Blobby or something doing the London Marathon. And that's my memory of doing it. And every year that I was there, I'd say, I'm going to do that next year, and never did. But there we are. Well, good luck to everyone who's running the London Marathon today.
Indeed. And it'll be a particularly poignant moment at the start of the marathon, which incidentally is going to be in half an hour's time, 40 minutes time, just after 9 o'clock our time. So just over, yes, half an hour or so. Because at the start line, tribute will be paid to Kelvin Kiptum, the Kenyan runner, who was also the 2023 winner. He, of course, died in a road accident near his home in his home country at the age of 24 back in February. So I think there's going to be a very poignant moment to remember him, somebody who ran in a course record of 2 hours, 1 minute and 25 seconds. It would take me that long to walk or run the first 2 miles, I think, SJ.
For sure, out. It's not happening now. It's certainly not happening with my dodgy foot. Gavin, thank you very much indeed. We'll